You're listening to the Community Living Show here on the NCRE Radio Networks and our hour show, CITR 101.9 FM.
Εγώ και εσύ μαζί. Εγώ και εσύ μαζί. Όταν η τύχη σου θα είναι φευγάτη και εσύ μακριά από το ζεστό σου κρεβάτι, τότε θυμίσου τη χρυσή συμβουλή. Εγώ και εσύ μαζί. Εγώ και εσύ μαζί.
Of course, that's the Greek version of You Got a Friend in Me. This is the Community Living Show. I am Kelly Rayburn. Looks as though I'm going to be doing a solo edition for the hour. But anyways, Michael Rubin has given me some stuff on the summit, which that happened, a five-day summit that was happening in Whistler, B.C., where leading experts were coming together in building a bridge to an economy where people and the planet can thrive. So we're going to have a listen to a bit of a pre-summit podcast starting with Marty Frost. Enjoy.
Welcome and welcome, Marty Frost. Thank you so much for being a part of the Impact Economy.
Yeah, I mean, I think things like the impact economy. I love the way this conference is coming together, and I'm really quite excited about being there. And because I think the people that are coming, the sense I get is that they are all active thinkers. You know, there's not a lot of inertia there. You know, like people do seem to be thinking on their feet and thinking actively, and I think that's the kind of thing we need to have happening. I guess my pessimism arises when I think about the extent to which that group of people, myself and others, have access to the corridors of power, like the places where decisions get made that affect all our lives. And I think that we don't have control of that. The really large scale changes in some way, I don't know how effective we can be right now in terms of large scale changes. Okay. So that's where my pessimism arises.
Fair enough. What do you think the questions that we need to ask ourselves are?
The questions. I think some of the stuff that's been talked about in the lead up to the conference, you know, it's just kind of like, what is your vision? You know, what do you see, or how do you see yourself sort of acting within the context of the sort of paradigm within which we live? That kind of thing. I think those are sort of the questions. I sometimes find it hard to reconcile the decisions that are made by sort of our leaders, how they can possibly, like, there just seems to be a disconnect between what I see as the situation that exists around us and the kinds of decisions that are being made.
Yes, fair enough. Well, thank you for that. I think that it's important for all of us to consider those questions. What roles do you play in community?
I think I see myself as a technician. In other words, I work with groups a lot in terms of sort of establishing vision, a vision of different communities. Let me say first that my decision in terms of addressing these issues is I work at sort of a small level, community level. You know, I don't, I'm not involved in a lot of real global movements or anything like that. So because I think that change has to happen on the ground. So that's what I do. I work to try and facilitate change on the ground.
And specifically, maybe you could share the work that you do within co-ops and the cooperative movement.
one of the things that sort of persists behind all of this is we have to find ways of organizing ourselves into groups. Individually, we can have an impact. As a group of people, we can have a greater impact. And when it comes to things like ownership of assets, or if not like ownership in the broader sense, in the sense that you take responsibility for sort of the care and shepherding of these assets, you have to have models of working together. You have to have frameworks within which you can work. In terms of sort of interfacing with the dominant economy, I've chosen the co-op model as the closest thing that I can see that really does have the capacity to bring power to people on the ground and at the same time work effectively within the dominant economy.
Yes. And what's your role within the impact economy?
I think giving people the tools they need to do exactly that, to find models within which they can hold tools collectively, can control assets collectively, and sort of work together within a framework, again, that has a link with the dominant economy, but is not necessarily dominated by it.
So fantastic. Great. So you have been helping the Citizens Media incorporate as a co-op. That's part of what I've seen you've been working on with this.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We've done a lot of talk around how the co-op itself will be structured, and also, you know, sort of what the work is that the co-op will be doing and how it can best set itself up to do that effectively.
Do you see your work integrating with others at the summit?
Right. I guess I just go back to what I said earlier, Tammy, and that is that whatever we do, you know, at least at present, has to find some way of fitting into the economic environment around us. You know, like I don't think we can isolate ourselves enough to avoid that, and I think that's that what I bring to the table. I think is a pretty good knowledge of ways of taking people's ideas and thoughts and needs and translating them into some sort of structure that will interface with the dominant economy, if not, you know, and without, I would hope, being subservient to it.
Marty, what are some of the questions that you'd like to have answered at this summit?
I have all kinds of questions about alternative currencies, all kinds of questions. And I know that some of the great thinkers of the world in alternative currencies are going to be there. And so I'm quite looking forward to that. I'm also, and just the other things, you know, the people that are coming and the kinds of things they're involved in, I'm looking forward to kind of immersing myself in that world and that mindset for a few days. I think that's going to be wonderful from my point of view. And then, of course, my work there is going to be sort of taking that and seeing where there are applications for setting up the what is now the I3 co-op. And that's going to be totally enjoyable.
Great. Are there people that you think should be at the summit that you know of that may want to attend?
Well, I see Carolyn's in touch with John Rostakis. I think John would be a good addition to the conference. I also appreciate the idea of trying to bring in a couple of credit union leaders. And I think that the identification of Vancity and CCEC as sample credit unions to be there is a good choice.
What are your hopes, Marty, for this summit?
It's a pretty big topic. I mean, my hopes for the summit, my first hope, of course, is that we come up with some additions to a really good, clear vision for the co-op and for the co-op's business plan in particular, like how it's going to operate, where it's going to operate, that kind of thing. And I think that with the minds in the room, I think that we can really add to that vision. And from the vision, you know, be able to sort of craft up a, a, a business direction for the co-op, as well as the sort of the philosophical and political direction that we see the co-op taking. So that's sort of my first hope. My second hope, of course, is, like I say, I really am looking forward to immersing my own head in this whole milieu for a few days because I think a lot about this stuff, and I very seldom get a chance to actually sit down and talk with people about it. And so I'm quite looking forward to that.
Thank you, Marty. Really appreciate your time and your energy and how much you've put into this project already. And absolutely looking forward to collaborating with you and working with you at the summit.
That's mutual, Tammy. Really looking forward to it.
So there you go. There's one part of it. So we're going to continue on with the pre-summit podcast in just a moment here on the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. But for now, we're going to take a break and we'll be coming right back in a moment.
The Canadian federal election is coming up on October 19th. It's important that you get registered in order to vote. To register, or check if you're already registered, you can visit the Elections Canada website at www.elections.ca. We also have lots of information for voters, including necessary ID, writing information, and the location of Elections Canada offices. If you're registered, you should receive a voter information card by mail telling you when and where to vote. You can also use the online voter information service. You can vote on election day at your designated polling station, on advance polling days between October 9th and October 12th, at any Elections Canada office, or by mail. Elections Canada offices are now open 7 days a week. To vote by mail, you need to apply by October 13th, online, by mail, or at any Elections Canada office. Remember, get informed, register, and vote by October 19th.
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the UBC and Kitsilano area at
Australian Boot Company, Banyan Books and Sound, The Bike Kitchen, The Cove, Dantry's Pub, Displace Hashery, Limelight Video, The Eatery, Fresh's Best Salsa, Gargoyle's Bar and Grill, Lotus Land Tattoo, Nuba Kitsilano, Prussian Music, Rufus's Guitar Shop, and the UBC Bookstore.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
And of course, we're back on the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks and of course our full hour flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM. We're talking about some impact economy during the 2015 summit in Whistler. This was a five-day summit where leading experts were coming together in building a bridge to an economy where people and planet can survive. We're going to continue on with the coverage. This one's going to be about 22 more minutes of this, and then we got some more ones that are unavailable. So here we go.
My name is Tammy Lee Meyer, and I'd like to welcome you to the Voices of the Impact Economy Summit. I'd like to welcome Jeff Clearwater, who's joining us from an intentional community, and he works with Village Labs. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
Yes, it's great to see you, and it's great to see you in the forest.
Yeah, it actually happens to be the best signal. That's what a blessing, huh?
Yeah. That's wonderful. So to start off with, my question is, are you concerned about the state of the world today?
Oh, my. I mean, the state of the world is, it's an understatement, a concerned. We live in like this accelerated rush of potential at the same time we're about to go over the cliff. So it's an amazing time to be alive. And even though I'm concerned, you have the sense that there's just as much potential to take it and expand it into this wonderful reality as much as there is the potential to crash into the wall. So concern is an understatement, but very excited as well.
Awesome. And do you think we can turn things around?
I really do. I have a deep faith in humanity. I'm seeing such a such an emergence of solutions, such an emergence of transcendent thinking, and such an emergence of there's a whole movement of this that are conceiving and building something that just a few years ago, you know, one might have great despair about. And so I can imagine that process continuing in a few years as well. So I am hopeful, but maybe I'm just a romantic, you know.
Might as well have hope.
Yeah.
So what are some of the hows for you? What are the ways that you think that we can turn things around?
Well, it's really clear to me, you know, I've been doing social change work for much of my life, many years in sustainability and in renewable energy. But all during that, it's been very clear to me that the economic system is the limiting factor. It's the thing that holds humanity back. I really think humanity is ready to evolve in a profound way. And I think we are in many ways, in consciousness and in the ways that even just that we treat each other, even though there's terrible things going on in the world, there's a certain consciousness that's emerging. There's a certain humanity that's growing up. But in the midst of our economic system, we can't set that free. It is held back by what we call the invisible architecture. It's not so invisible to us, but we think it's invisible to many. It's like fish in water. They don't know if the water's bad or not. It's because they live in it, you know. Yes. And the economic system is much like that. It's fundamentally broken at the core, so there's no way we can express our full humanity in it. Yes. So, and at the same time, the good news is now that we're starting to see that, the fix is just as profound. The fix enables such a great leap forward. So I'm very excited to be part of those that are imagining that.
Yes. So, I mean, coming to the Impact Economy Summit, that is a direct hit, and your work and your passion and your thoughts are so appreciated. What are some of the hopes that you have for the summit?
Well, I think we're moving in the movement from theory to practice. I think we're, I am so excited that Art Brock's going to be there, and some of the people that for me have paved the way in terms of theory and in terms of, and art has incredible practical application. We at Village Lab, we like to see ourselves as kind of the practical applied arm of the sacred economics movement. Like we're out there on the ground trying out this stuff and developing tools. And so I'm really excited to share what we've learned and to learn from others what they've learned.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So let's talk about Village Labs. Tell us about the project. I had the honor to talk to Fernanda last week, but you go.
Yeah. So Village Lab it's singular. We see ourselves, well, first of all, we see the village meme as you know, a meme that needs to come back. We mean village in all aspects of the word. There's a certain appropriate scale to human development, human interaction, and human organization that really should express itself at the village scale. And we don't mean going back in time to villages. We mean the village of the future. So Village Lab is a place to experiment with all what we call all four quadrants of sustainability. It's the economic, the ecological, the political or the decision-making, the power sharing, as well as the social. So we are consultants. We bring forward to what we call communities of intent. So any community that is has a community of purpose, a community of practice, or a community of place, we call it. So community, we see communities of purpose, practice, and place to be the hope of the future. These are the small groups that are getting together and really organizing, experimenting, building the new world in front of us. And they really have been developing the solutions for many, many years. And many of the solutions are ready. There's a lot of success happening in communities around decision-making processes like sociocracy and social agreement fields and how to be together. In the economics realm, we're kind of the communities movement kind of represents the those that experiment with sharing. Yeah. We've been doing sharing a long time, and so the sharing economy is not new. It's been going on for thousands of years. But inside that, there's a fundamental rethink of even how to perceive wealth and currency. And a lot of our work comes out of the work of Arthur Brock and Eric Harris Brown. Their theory in metacurrency to us is really the brilliant breakthrough that we needed. And so we're out here applying it. We're out here thinking about how do we create systems that acknowledge multiple levels of wealth, that empower currencies, that empower the multiple levels of wealth. So yeah. It's hard to kind of conceive almost of non-tradable currencies, but for many people, but for us, that's the world we swim in. Yes. And we've gone through a systematic development of from the personal to the planetary in terms of our tools. And so I could tell you about a few of those tools if you'd like.
Sure. Before we dive into that, maybe you can give me an example of some of these communities of practice, of one of them, so that we could get a sense of how big of the impact that your work has on the ground.
Sure. Well, you know, there's a lot of different types of communities. There's the intentional communities movement. I'm sitting right here at Sirius Community in Western Massachusetts, which is a Findhorn daughter community, and it's 30 people living on 80 acres. And so there's experiments in social living going on, but what's really exciting is that those of us in the network of those communities, the Fellowship for Intentional Community or the Global Ecovillage Network, are starting to do compare and contrast across all of the communities. So we can start to see the various types of economic systems and the various types of decision-making processes. And we can kind of envision a program of best practices. And so we're learning from all of them. But it's not just residential communities, it's communities of purpose and practice. So everything from online chat rooms to churches to Occupy. I mean, those are all communities of purpose and practice. And the common theme is that they're sitting in circle and they're figuring out a new way. They're figuring out how to live in harmony with each other and with the earth. And the economic piece that they're experimenting with may seem humble at a small level, but it is the laboratory for the planet. Mm-hmm. So that's how we see our work.
And what I love about how you present your work is the learning and teaching that's there with that, because really we have to share with each other. It's kind of the knowledge, the sharing of the knowledge economy piece that you're really fostering as well.
Yeah, and what's beautiful is like we're envisioning a new series of workshops that Village Lab is putting forward. But unlike any other series of workshops, we're able to use metacurrency principles, which means that the reputation currency that the students get, or the participants get, I should say, coming to the workshops, they can use those in the community's movement. So in other words, if you came to... It's a very simple way of how reputation currency works is if you came to five or six different workshops and maybe you learned decision-making processes and maybe you learned permaculture and maybe you learned a new paradigm economics or applied sacred economics. Once you have those in your kind of reputation currency, you can then spend them or use them to travel in the worlds that use them. You can then go to communities that appreciate those skills and have that currency. So they're very simple ways, but very powerful ways where the new economy is emerging. And we really can see a post-capitalist world. We really are starting to see the build. You know, we're starting to understand the parts and actually practice them. It's not just theory anymore.
So maybe we can talk a little bit about the shift of values, value, and valuation, because there's a lot in that word value, and you've been talking about reputation and all of those pieces. Can you just talk into what, how do our values need to shift to make these kind of transitions? How does the concept of value need to shift?
Yeah. So a very, very simple example. Let's say we worked in a team together and we were building a product. You know, it could be a widget or a software product or whatever. And at the end of the month, instead of just using hours to distribute the profit, what if we cared about each other's personal development? What if we cared about each other's professional development? And what if we cared about each other's relations at home? And what if we cared about how much carbon it took for you to get to work? And how about if all of those things were tracked all month?
Yes.
So I may be working with you and I might give you a currency for your abilities. I might give you cans. You can do it because you've really grown in your professional ability. And you might say, well, you know, you're a little behind in that, but you're so much fun to work with. And so I give you some flowers, you know. And someone else might come along and say, you know, it's great working with you, but we can't do this anymore. We got to fly across the country to do it, and the carbon footprint's way off the charts. We can start to develop multiple what we call currency constellations and right. look at how our work together, you know, at the end of the month, we can distribute the profits, not from just a monetary sense. We can say, you know, let's track your development and professionally so that we can actually find the weak spots and the strong spots and cross-pollinate those with the rest of the team. And so it's those mm-hmm. kinds of full valuation that where money becomes like one of the little things on the side, it becomes one of the mediums of many that are just or more valuable.
Yes, wonderful.
I think our biggest example, our biggest excitement is to share what we call the Wealth Stewardship Circle. And it's kind of our crown jewel of our applied economics. And
great, let's hear about it.
So what we've done is imagine if you could tear down the firewall between for-profit and nonprofit. Imagine you could tear down the firewall between philanthropy and investment. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is you can imagine a spectrum of enterprises that are producing wealth along multiple currencies, multiple valuations. Mm. When you have a firewall between for-profit and nonprofit, you tend to push each of them to the edges and make neither of them very efficient. One goes to the profit edge and has to worry about money. The other has to go to the values edge only and be the one that can convince the philanthropist to give them money for their good deeds. But what if you took the firewall down and you allowed a spectrum of multiple types of wealth to be generated by any enterprise? What happens is the middle tends to fill in and you find your appropriate niche. You find the place where the value you're trying to create for the world it finds its perfect balance.
Yes.
And if you also do that at the philanthropy and investment level, then you free investors, you liberate investors from having to get 10 times their money or 4 times their money on one out of 10 risky investments. You instead create an ecosystem of enterprises that are very secure and safe, like a Mondragon ecosystem. And you bring investors in and say, you may not make as much, but it'll be safe and secure. And the same thing with the philanthropist, you say, what if you could, instead of just give your money away and rely on tax credits, what if you could be part of the family here? And maybe you'll make money, maybe you won't, but you're able to empower patient capital in a yeah. way that the system can't presently. And when you combine those two, so we have the wealth generation circle. We have those that are what we used to call nonprofits and for-profits. We call them wealth generation circle. And yes. what we used to call philanthropists and investors, we now call the wealth cultivation circle. And then we bring in the third part, which capitalism hasn't tended to pay for, which is the wealth integration circle. And those are the people that weave the non-monetary and the monetary wealth together and spin off more wealth and create the whole circle's community.
And
so we're basically creating...
Sorry.
Excuse me?
What does that look like, these weavers?
So basically, they're the ones that are setting the community circle. They're setting the processes. They're setting the container. Mm-hmm. They're setting the ethical or spiritual, if you like, container for everyone else. They're establishing the internal valuation accounting system.
Yes.
Metacurrency based, of course. And so when you have that whole circle together, now you can really do things together. And what you've eliminated is the alienating relationships of capitalism. You've now brought people into what we like to say is that we're all upholding each other's core gifts.
Yes,
we're all upholding each other's wealth. And so that's not just a theory. We're actually forming the first circle. We have former investors and former philanthropists at the table, and we have many businesses, and we're actually putting together our first wealth stewardship circle.
Wonderful.
So congratulations to the summit, because Caroline and I had a long talk about how she really needs that circle. Like the summit is really she's really talking about the same model. And a lot of us are all seeing the same model.
Yes.
So it's very exciting. We're starting to transcend some of the inherent limitations.
Say thank you so much for that. I really feel that that's one of the incredibly important conversations to have at the summit. I'd love to find out from you some of the questions that you're bringing to the summit. What is it that you want to have answered? What is it that you want to know?
One of the biggest questions is going to be, how do we all collaborate and not get caught up in the old fears of territory, turf, ego? There's a lot of very powerful people coming to the summit that have their life's work on the line. And we're really understanding, all of us understand, that if we don't collaborate, we won't succeed. And yet at the same time, there's a sense of wanting to steward your work well and bring it out in the right sequence and in the right circles and make sure that it does not get co-opted by those that might take it somewhere. And most of us know each other, most of us are invited. I think all of us trust who's been invited, but you never know how open to be with work that could be very, very revolutionary. But it's not that we want to be profiteering on it, but we want to steward it well. We want to make sure that it rolls out in the right sequence. Mm-hmm. And so that's a tricky question that we'll all be looking at. Go ahead.
And it's important work.
Yeah, that's that's modeling the work in a deeper level as well for the world. And so that's a big question. I think the other question is, what are other people's applied experiments, and how are they doing? It's a chance to really compare notes and say, what have you tried? What have you worked? What has worked and what has not worked so well?
Great. Well, I'd love to hear your insights about some of the folks that are coming, because you do know quite a few of the people. So what's some of the work that you're excited about collaborating with and sharing?
Well, I actually am somewhat of a newcomer to the full circle, because Fernanda was actually supposed to be coming to this and she couldn't. So I'm coming instead. I have, like I've mentioned several times, I have great, great respect for Arthur Brock, the work he's done. Michelle Bowens is a total hero of mine. The P2P work is just, it's so fundamental, and it has built so much over the years. Tiberius has work that I'm just now getting into and loving reading. Mm-hmm. I had the pleasure and honor of meeting Matthew Slater, Matt Slatz, at FinTorrent at the Global Ecovillage Network Summit just 3 or 4 months ago. And we had a total instant psychedelic connection. He's just a very, very great thinker and very clear. And so just really loving, and that's about who I know the most. I've had some great Skype sessions with Warren, and Caroline herself is just bringing so much. So
yes.
yeah, excited to meet the rest. I'm aware of their work, but have not really met too many.
Great. And so some final thoughts and some final hopes for the summit.
I just hope that we can really look at how we can apply, you know, pick an art object, you know, pick a football, pick something that we can all play with and gather around and apply ourselves to. I think Arthur Brock brings several of those. He's got a lot of different models he's working on now that really work. I think our wealth stewardship circle could be exciting. Mm-hmm. I'm not attached to which one we pick, but I really want to dig our teeth in and help each other and make something happen.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jeff. Really appreciate the work that you're doing and absolutely looking forward to meeting you at the summit. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the role you're playing. It's crucial getting the word out. So much looking forward to your work as well.
And of course, that was The Citizens of Economy by Jeff Clearwater. We're going to come right back in a moment. This is the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks and our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM.
The Vancouver International Film Festival will once again welcome some of the world's finest films to one of the most beautiful cities on the planet. From September 24th to October 9th, the 34th annual VIFF will present over 300 films from 70 countries to 9 Vancouver screens. Visit the Vancouver International Film Festival online at viff.org.
Everything changed, I knew this day.
Late Night Show is the start of the weekend. We play all types of D&D or jungle for the first half of the show. On the second half of the show, it gives you that irritating noise that you just don't want to hear it. Or it could be some ambient sounds that might drift off and or fall asleep in the moment of life. Or it could be some new age that you just heard on most stations, but even better. Or it could be that this music has no beat or drums in that music. Either way, tune into the Late Night Show, now broadcasting on Saturday mornings at 12:30 p.m. right after the Medicine Show, also hosted by new DJ Rain and Jason Lawrence. If you happen to hear us around the world, you can always check us out at CITR.ca.
Welcome back to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks and, of course, our full-hour show, CITR 101.9 FM. We're continuing on with the Impact Economy from 2015. This was a 5-day summit in Whistler, British Columbia, where leading experts were coming together in building a bridge to an economy where people and the planet can thrive. So we're going to continue on. This one, I'm trying to get the... This one is Leonardo Bidenwald.
Hi there. I'm Tammy Lee Meyer with the Impact Economy Summit coming up in Whistler this October 5th to 9th. I'm here today with Leander Bindewald, who's done a ton of work in complementary currencies and is a voice of the next economy and is looking to help to impact the economy through this gathering coming up. Welcome, Leander.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Great. We're really looking forward to hear more about your work, but off the top, I've got a couple of questions. One is, are you concerned about the state of the world today?
Yes, of course. But that is also, I mean, this is a question that comes up a lot in my day-to-day, not so much work maybe, but in life, in my engagement with even with colleagues, where this is a constant tension to hold between feeling really concerned to the degree of feeling paralyzed and being still enthusiastic about the little bits of peace that you can do and not losing, well, finding the right space and framework to actually enjoy and fully indulge and thrive in the little bits and pieces that one could hope to affect and to contribute. And they, of course, I mean, I kept also repeating to friends the scene from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I'm not sure if that's a big meme over there, but in the UK, at least everybody somehow has read that, where the biggest punishment is to be sent to that bunker on a faraway planet that just gives you the impression of how infinitely small you are compared to everything, which mostly kills everybody, but that galaxy president dude, Beeble Broxson, kind of holding that tension always is quite relevant to know your place, but also still enjoy it anyway.
And contribute.
Yes, well, of course, the contribution of any infinitely small particle is also just an infinitely small stone thrown into a very big pond, but ripples do add up sometime, and there's nothing else that actually does affect change but ripples in the end.
Yes, absolutely. So do you think that we can turn things around, Leander?
In that weekend whistler? Yeah, definitely, that'll be it. After that, the world will be different. We cannot not turn things around. Once I developed a whole keynote about that sentence of we cannot not change the world. It's really just a matter of how consciously we are trying and with what intention we are putting ourselves into that. Again, knowing that it is a very far shot, but it's also a certainty that the world is constantly changing, and any little bit of intention and good work, taking it even just the tiniest nudge into a intentional direction, will actually change the whole thing eventually.
Yes. And so what do you think the importance of the economy is in this change?
So at the moment, I'm testing myself as a sociologist, having just started a PhD this year at the University of Cumbria after doing a lot of other project work in complementary currency in London. And as such, I would have first of all to say, well, what do you mean with the economy? It's already a weird thing that we're giving a concept and a word so much space and so much importance and personifying it in a way as if the economy is actually something or somebody that is doing bad things or that can be made to do better things. This is really just a very ephemeral collective function of all of us. So of course, there is some things that we perceive as economic, and that is as broad or narrow as you want it to be. And it's even in this complementary currency space, it's always important to remind ourselves that the economy is not what we read about in the papers. It is really just this collective function of fulfilling people's needs. And in whatever way that can happen or is happening or that we want that to happen in.
So maybe we can start with a little bit of your work. Can you tell us about what you've been working on and what you're moving towards?
Yes, I can try. There had been 3 years recently that were pretty easy to say what I was doing, and I was managing a big EU project on the topic of complementary currencies and on behalf of the New Economics Foundation in London, which is a pretty awesome think tank that has thrived in all these very difficult questions and difficulties over the nearly 30 years. Next year it'll be the 30th anniversary, always giving a voice to these other ideas and giving a place and a presence of these ambitions and hopes and intentions. Starting with the other economic summits in parallel to the G7 summits in London 30 years ago, and still just bringing out these great ideas into the minds of the general public. And there's quite a big followership of that, and just on the street, so to say, but also in a very particular way, kind of connecting the grassroots ideas with people in government and policymakers at all levels. Being situated just across from Westminster in London is quite a weird place, and that took me to London also for 3 years, where I really hated to be in that big, big city, and it just felt like a Mordor all the time. And that's why, well, we were always joking, well, if there's a Mordor, then somebody has to go there and throw in the ring. Was the unpleasant part of that. But this EU project was called Community Currencies in Action, CCIA.eu would be the website, and there's a whole lot of outcomes and publications and documentation and learning sharing. That still lingers on even though the project is over. And there's also 6 different community currencies that were supported and launched and monitored and demonstrated through this project, all the way from time bank systems to business currencies and local currencies and everything in between. And there's, of course, a lot of research on Bitcoin and the so-called cryptocurrencies. Maybe we'll get to that term at some point. And since that project had ended, I moved to the University of Cumbria in the north of England, and I'm now surrounded by greenery and mountains and lakes, which is really great. And I'm doing a PhD on the critical discourse of money and showing how this practice of complementary currencies is basically, well, in the framing of this PhD, is challenging this discourse, basically meaning that everybody up to government and central banks and regulators don't actually quite know how to say anymore what money is, since there are so different kinds of money out there right now. Before, yeah, it was relatively easy saying, well, kind of falling back to this notion that is also unfortunately ingrained in the law, saying money is just what we have in our pockets, right? That's it. And now you can't be so opportunistic anymore, and you have to actually come to a much broader understanding of money and currencies. And
great.
That is also something that helps to build something new.
Yeah, I have a question. How would you describe complementary currencies to the uninitiated?
The easy thing is to say there's any kind of information or unit system that people use to facilitate their exchanges, which is not a national currency anywhere. So, of course, the money we use at the moment is also just a unit information system that facilitates the world economy. And it's really only this just, again, a matter of definition to call one thing complementary and the other one the dominant or the conventional money. As soon as there is many, many more of these community or complementary currencies out there, maybe the national currencies will look like just a complementary currency to all the other things we will be using. At the moment, it is these experiments and initiatives and pilots and practical systems all around the world doing something without falling back to national currency as the medium of exchange or the accounting system.
Great. And what are some of the challenges in really getting the uptake for complementary currencies in the world?
It is kind of in the nature of it. One commonality across all these complementary currencies is pretty much that they are voluntary in use. So there is no government that forces you to use that. With some, you can now pay your taxes, but you're not obliged to use them for taxes. So it's really up to everybody to decide if they want to use this currency or not. And for this, there had been many approaches, and a lot of currencies just appeal to the goodwill and to some kind of hippie-ish ideologies. As much as we would all like to adhere to that, that's not a compelling, long-lasting pitch, basically. So it really comes down to actually articulating and designing really well what a specific currency is trying to solve, which the conventional monetary or economic system doesn't provide for people, and then offering that out to people and thus hoping to actually fulfill a need to bridge a gap, to make something happening that we want to see and that wouldn't come about without that currency. And, well, getting better at this is at more in the bleeding edge of currency implementation. And the difficulties thus far have not only been in those practical terms, but also a lot to do with just this underlying current of not understanding or not even questioning money. As long as people have the impression and have learned that experience that money is really only that one thing that they get out of the ATM, they wouldn't necessarily consider that there can be anything else. And thus, even when they're confronted and exposed to that, they often totally disregard and not recognize it. And it's quite, in that sense, very helpful that Bitcoin came about and brought it into all the mainstream newspapers, that there is another currency is possible, so to say, even though there's a lot of things to say about Bitcoin, which then makes it not the ideal other currency, but at least open that space. And that is, well, again, also what I'm doing with my PhD, kind of proving that even the Bank of England doesn't understand money anymore, because they have to completely revise their assumptions around it. And that will help complementary currencies in general, that people just wake up to money as a social technology that they can use and influence to their objectives instead of just something that is handed to them.
And so what would you say the challenge that complementary currencies are looking to solve, and Bitcoin as well?
And it's across the board. Whatever people would like to see in their world can be articulated, designed for, and facilitated through complementary currencies. Of course, a lot of these things that most people think they want, like a new house and a bigger car and all these things, can also be facilitated through conventional currency for some, but it becomes more and more obvious that that is failing. To make it easy sometimes to introduce it to people, we normally would categorize it in these big spheres, saying, well, there are some complementaries that are economically in their orientation, so they're just helping businesses, for example, to have cheaper access to finance, to have more liquidity, to have better opportunities to market and sell their products. There's very different other currencies that are in the social domain, trying to re-engage disenfranchised communities and populations into some kind of an exchange with each other. And really, it's not like, sometimes it feels so weird for many people to talk about, or those that ask about it, go like, yeah, but we're all part of the market and we're all connected to people and we all have these thousands of friends, at least on Facebook. But for many people in reality, that's very different. And there is a lot of isolation and complete hibernation there. And some of these social currencies, time banks in particular, just try to bring people back into a community and create and reinforce that. There's other currencies that have environmental objectives, carbon saving, recycling, caring and maintaining the build and the natural environment. And yes, since you mentioned it, then there's currencies where this is actually not so clear. So if you ask Bitcoin, if you post the question, Bitcoin, what is it good for and what has it been set up for? It very much seems to be a rather political stance, or really just a technological experiment that then, of course, people infuse with what they want to get out of it. Unfortunately, most people using it seem to be just in for the quick buck that they can make by mining or trading Bitcoins, which then, of course, you go like, okay, it's a different currency, but it's actually not doing anything different than what they could be doing with conventional currencies. And really putting this impact lens onto the currencies in retrospect and evaluating them and understanding Bitcoin, for example, for what it is, but also in terms of designing a currency from what it's supposed to achieve, and then working back from there to what kind of currencies you're actually most probably looking at, and that often exclude a lot of objectives, already exclude a lot of practical implementation pathways that you could use. And that is something that is this design thinking is really coming into currency world strongly at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So at the Impact Economy Summit, I mean, one of the goals is to really look at how do we create currencies and create value? Like what's the interaction between what is of value in communities and how people can support that using, you know, new systems and new ways of doing things. Of course, we're bringing all of these experts in from all around the world to look at that. And so I guess here's my question. What's your hopes for bringing all of these minds together to think into ways to be able to map true value for people?
As okay. I talked so much about tensions earlier and these differential, of course, there's, again, two souls living in me there going like, well, on the one hand, my intention is to really just enjoy being with all these amazing people. And that's this very strong calling to just, since everybody's in there for it, that must add up to something, at least just our communal learning, and from bringing all these ideas and minds and hearts together, that will have, again, this radiating ripple effect. And if it's really just for intention and learning, and even these broadcasts are just another blip out there in the ocean of information that speaks to a different idea of value, of money, of collaboration, of the economy, and that definitely helps. More practically, I guess it is, again, about, and interesting you brought that value topic into that as well, which is, again, this a word that is often misunderstood and has so many colorations already. If you say, so what's the value of your economy currency system, people again think of economic value first of all. It might seem that a different system, a different platform, a different technology is miraculously multiplying value somehow, and you can extract value of having this new software out there or this new website up. And that in our intentions, I guess, is quite different, and value is not something that you create through a currency. A currency articulates different values, and for this we will, if we knew what values we're actually trying to bring to the fore, that will mean that we need a different currency to speak to that and to show that to people, to make that actable,
actionable,
not actionable, yeah. Well, just to make it tangible and to make it able to talk about it and to show it and to have to come to accounts with these currencies. And so in this way, it's not that value is currencies are creating value, but currencies are articulating different values. And nicely, different currencies, and with the spreads of different possible currencies, at least if you take this broad definition of what a currency is, you can articulate value from old school economic values down to human values and the value of sharing, the value of beauty, the value of interactions, diversity. All this can be embodied in an information system by encode of the information system, so to say. And then it really, at the summit, I guess, also it becomes a more an exercise of getting to a clarity of what it is actually that we try to facilitate, that we want to spark, that we want to show a spotlight on, and thus make it something that people can interact with in the ecosystem that is kind of already there. I mean, there are these projects in Africa that you have interviewed already. There are the seeds of technology that makes this possible. There are the memes of these currencies that might then be the connector between these rather ephemeral ideas and things, but really bringing it to the forefront, what it actually is that is new and amazing and sparkling in there, and making more of that possible through the appropriate technology and the appropriate currency is, I guess, the working task for the summit.
Yes. Fernanda Ibarra, when we did our talk, she talked about holopticism and the importance of each of us knowing about each other. So one thing I'd love to do is find out about what you know of the people that are coming to the summit, and beyond that, who you're excited to be able to learn more from.
It seems I know so many, but maybe it's really just a handful, because the number of amazing people coming has also multiplied over the month. But I, of course, from my background, know all these currency wizards that are coming. So Fernanda and Art and Matthew Slater. With Matthew, I'm a good friendship, and he was sleeping here on my couch for some weeks recently. Fernanda, I only ever met online, but had a lot of really great exchanges and interactions with. Art, I met once in New York, and I'm really happy to see him again. And they are for me really these on this edge of showing how currency thinking, for example, to for lack of better words, is actually at this interface between what is practical and implementable and actionable on the ground, and how that actually reaches and informed by and nourishes itself from a much deeper, more philosophical or idealistic framing and context in that. And Ada would always describe as a philosopher first, but also a tech geek and guru and amazing very linear and logic thinker in all these senses. Michelle Bounds, I met only ever very briefly.
Well, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to leave it there right now. But it's very interesting how they do a lot of interviews on the impact economy, and that was happening on that 5-day event in Whistler. Thank you, Michael, for taking the opportunity to have the special, you know, the voices of the impact economy. Anyways, we're going to be back again next week, but tune in till tomorrow for our other half-hour station on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, for more community living. And of course, we will be back again next week, same time, same station, on CITR, UBC's website. The website is citr.ca, and of course, 101.9 FM. We'll be back again next week. Till then, take care, everybody. See you again soon.
Sorry, it almost made